claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
With the provocations being undertaken by NATO with its operations in the Black Sea, to which we shall return, that moment where will the party will become as you are may be getting much, much closer than any of us may have heretofore supposed, and being deliberately provoked by the U.S. and NATO. Simply outrageous. In the meanwhile, if you want to witness a payoff from the stolen election where Israel, which controls the mainstream media here in the United States, went all in for Biden and all out trashing Trump. Remember how I've displayed panels of 100 executives at CNN, for example, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Another 100 executives at NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. 100 executives at the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. You got it in the headlines today. Biden orders airstrikes against facilities used by Iran-backed militia groups on the Iraq-Syria border. The attacks took place on Sunday. Alleged defensive precision airstrikes, but there was nothing defensive about it. This was simply kowtowing to Israel, which is dominating the U.S.-American military in a fashion that Trump would not have allowed or tolerated. The targets, we're told, were selected because these facilities are utilized by Iran-backed militias that are engaged in unmanned aerial activity, vehicle attacks against U.S. personnel and facilities in Iraq. Specifically, the U.S. strikes targeted operational and weapon storage facilities at two locations in Syria and one of Iraq, both of which lie close to the border between those countries. Now, frankly, I've heard of no unmanned aerial vehicles attacks against U.S. personnel and facilities in Iraq. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada. This is complete bullshit. They just made this up. And of course, it's obviously going to be virtually impossible to falsify. I mean, they make these claims, they're in general and vague language, and they're virtually impossible to demonstrate were false. But I guarantee you 100% this is all fabricated, and this is part of our elaborate payoff to Israel by the Biden administration. House Speaker Pelosi, who of course was part of the agreement, said in a statement that the airstrikes appear to be a targeted and proportional response to a serious and specific threat. Well, let me tell you how bad it is. The United States' obligation to Israel is so great that during the Obama administration in 2012, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and CIA Director John Brennan, with a collusion of Barack Obama, created ISIS, this terrorist army, to put pressure on the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad, which Michael Flynn, who was then the director of the intelligence agency, objected. As a consequence, Brennan suggested to Obama that Flynn should be fired, which Obama obligingly did. I'm telling you, the more you learn about this guy, the blacker he represents. Meanwhile, we know all kinds of reasons ISIS was made in the USA, including that many members of ISIS are sporting United States Army tattoos. We even have an ISIS beheading video that was shot on a soundstage that was hacked from a McCain staffer. The article and video were retrieved from the French language edition of Sputnik News, which turns out to be one of the better international news organizations in the world, along with Press TV and Russia Today, now known as RT, where the U.S. has now shut down Press TV, and that's because of all the attacks that are going to take place on Iran. They don't want the American people to have access to information coming out of Iran about what's going to be inflicted upon Iran, of which we're only seeing now the opening edition. Meanwhile, the United States is seeking to have a never-ending, this is a further report from 2015. The United States is seeking to have a never-ending war in the Middle East, which would make the countries there unable to stand up to Israel, says former CIA contractor Stephen Kelly. Headline, U.S. created ISIS for the sake of Israel, exactly as I'm explaining here. The purpose of creating this group is to have a never-ending war in the region that serves several purposes. Obviously, it's going to break the countries apart, disrupt their life, reduce their ability to oppose Israel, he told Press TV. Kelly went on to say, the other thing is providing constant flow of orders for weapons from the military-industrial complex back home, which, of course, is feeding a lot of money to the senators who are pushing for these wars. A new report said the Pentagon is paying monthly stipends to the so-called moderate rebels in Syria who are being trained to fight the ISIS terrorists, except they're all on the same side. We have many reports, for example, about Israel giving medical assistance to ISIS members, warriors who were harmed. They were raping and pillaging. They were like Attila the Hun. They were murdering all the men, raping all the women. I mean, disgusting beyond belief. But this reflects, and if it doesn't bring it home now, you really have to ponder. America is Israel's bitch. Meanwhile, in Florida, we have the condominium attack. Many of you will have seen the videos. I'm watching one now where you see that center section come down. Then you see a few moments later, the right wing come down. These were all clearly demolitions. The question becomes whether they were natural, as it were, happening in the normal course of events as structural failures. Or were they controlled and deliberately brought down? You can see a few flashes of light in that last wing, leading some to suspect that it could have been a controlled demolition. Well, I'm doing a lot of research on this, and I've got a wonderful resource in Joe Olson, who's an engineer, brilliant guy, qualified in structural engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, civil engineering. We did a special report yesterday, which you can find on my BitChute channel. BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer will get you there. You want to watch it, you want to share it. Meanwhile, of course, Governor DeSantis is declaring we need a definitive explanation in a timely manner as to why a 12-story condo building partially collapsed in Surfside, Florida. The Chamberlain South building was in 1981 in the process of being recertified as part of Florida's 40-year recertification program. The 12-story tower was undergoing roof construction and other repairs prior to the collapse. Let me mention that a point to which I will return, this was done doing a lift slab construction technique that has had previous collapse or structural failures in the past. The Surfside mayor, Charles Burkett, told reporters that roof work gets done on buildings all the time, and it's hard to imagine that could have been the impetus for such a catastrophic collapse, and I'm sure it probably wasn't. I agree, it probably wasn't. There's no reason for this building to go down like that unless someone literally pulls out the supports from underneath or they get washed out or there's a sinkhole or something like that because it just went down. Well, that's worth pondering. When he talks about literally pulling out the support, that's what happened, of course, to Building 7 on 9/11, that as Larry Silverstein himself admitted in an interview with NPR, that he was contacted by, he called him the fire commander, but actually he started to use a different name, what they should do. And he said there'd been so much loss of life and destruction, perhaps the best thing to do is to pull it, which is a construction term for bring down by controlled demolition. And he added, they made the decision to pull and we watched the building go down. Now, Dan Rather, at the time observing the event in real time, reported how this looks just like a controlled demolition we see in Las Vegas with casinos and hotels. And he was spot on. That was a classic controlled demolition. Unlike this Champaign Tower, however, Building 7 was of extremely robust construction. It was erected over two enormous electrical generators providing backup electricity for Lower Manhattan. It was designed to never collapse. In fact, Barry Jennings was actually in the building that morning, heard explosions going off, stepped over dead bodies, found half-eaten sandwiches, still steaming cups of coffee. When he went to the command and control center, Rudy Giuliani had created there, where Rudy himself did not go. I'm sorry to say that while I'm a fan of Rudy in various respects, I'm convinced he was complicit in 9/11. In any case, it was so hard to bring down Building 7, it didn't occur until 7 hours after the destruction of the North Tower, which, again, was no collapse. As I shall explain, on American Media Periscope, I'm doing a two-part series with Scott Bennett, the first part just having occurred Friday, the second part to occur this Wednesday, about the faking of all four of the 9/11 crash sites, how the World Trade Center was destroyed, and who was responsible and why, that you might want to catch. Meanwhile, we're trying to figure out what happened here. There are a lot of photographs you're seeing. There's almost nonstop coverage. Scientists, here's another report. This is from the Daily Mail. Scientists discovered a year ago the 12-floor Miami condo was sinking and needed extensive repairs for rusted steel and damaged concrete. Joe has explained the sinking 2 millimeters a year because it sits on reclaimed wetlands really was negligible significance, that this had virtually nothing to do with it. and engineers specializing in concrete repair projects told Miami Herald that one potential structural flaw called concrete spalling jumped out at him when he watched video of the collapse. The engineer, Greg Batista, described the flaw as a form of concrete cancer. You can find photographs of the building. I mean, it's got a very dated appearance, but that's because of the style of construction. The Seaview condo was built in 1981 on the beach, had a few two-room units on the market, asking prices $600,000 to $700,000. Where the area is a mix of old and new apartments. Simon Wadowski, a professor at the Department of Earth and Environment at Florida International, told USA Today he knew instantly which building had collapsed when he heard news reports, because he studied the building for the report published last year. I looked at this this morning and said, oh my God, we did detect that. Scientists had warned that the building was sinking. A 2020 study from Florida International found the Champaign Towers at a rate of 2 millimeters, also due to have a safety recertification for the first time in 40 years. Now, there is a tweet going around allegedly from John McAfee, which I frankly regard to be a fabrication. It says, if anything happens to me, please know that the 31 terabytes of files I have are located at hard drives at the location here, the condo location, and gives a, I mean, this is just ridiculous. If you had something precious, suppose you had $1 billion worth of gold in your basement, would you say, if anything happens to me, please let the world know that I've got $1 billion worth of gold in my basement? I mean, this is equally absurd. John McAfee was a very smart guy, no doubt had a dead man switch to trigger off the release of the documents and records that he'd acquired through the internet, but he wouldn't be declaring their location. Meanwhile, Joe did research and discovered that the first major failure involving the lift slab technique occurred back in 1954, when 8 workers and speculators were injured when a 250-ton slab roof collapsed at a Catholic high school in San Mateo, California. According to the Engineering News Record, a widely respected trade journal. So I've known since 1954 that there are problems with the lift slab technique. There was another event in 2017 at the Huron Towers in Ann Arbor, which utilizes the lift slab technique. In major building projects, concrete wall and floor slabs are often assembled using the in situ, meaning on the site, or cast in place method of construction. But a cheaper and faster alternative that infamously played a major role in a tragic construction accident takes the raising the roof expression literally. The lift slab method of construction involves casting post-tension floor slabs on the ground and then lifting them into place. Successive levels are then cast on top of the previous slab and raised to their respective positions with hydraulic jacks. A parting compound between the slabs prevents bonding. Narrow openings around the columns allow steel collars to be embedded, which are then used for lifting the slab. The technique is ideal in buildings with conventional and repetitive floor plates. But as Joe has observed, this method of construction has approximately a 40-year lifespan. If it was built in 1981 with a 40-year lifespan, then you'd expect a problem in 2021, which is, of course, where we are today. I did a wonderful interview with Joe yesterday, 50 minutes long. You can find it as a Real Deal special report on my blog at BitChute channel Jim Fetzer. That's something you don't want to miss. Meanwhile, you won't believe who just drove the final nail in the coffin for Joe Biden's presidency. It was Arizona Democrat Senator Kristen Gillibrand, who has spoken out in support of the filibuster, won't compromise on the 60 votes. And frankly, she has won my heart. This is very appropriate. Arizona Senator Kristen Sinema made it official. She'll not vote to eliminate or even weaken the 60-vote threshold to end debate and break a filibuster. She announced her support for the filibuster in a Washington Post op-ed published a day before Democrats were to hold a key vote on legislation to impose nationwide voter fraud through weakened voter ID combined with expanding universal mail-in voting and ballot harvesting to all 50 states. This was their most treasured bill, number one in the House, and I'm glad to say it was defeated. The best way to achieve durable, lasting results? Bipartisan cooperation. It's no secret that I oppose eliminating the Senate 60-vote threshold. I held the same view during three terms in the U.S. House and said the same after I was elected to the Senate in 2018. If anyone expected me to reverse my position because my party now controls the Senate, they should know that my approach to legislating in Congress is the same whether in the minority or the majority. She also hinted at calling out the Democrats in her caucus who support the filibuster but refuse to say so because of fear of blowback from the left. It's time for the Senate to debate the legislative filibuster so senators and our constituents can hear and fully consider the concerns and consequences. Hopefully, senators can then focus on crafting policies through open legislative policies and amendments, finding compromises that earn broad support, she added. With the filibuster intact, much of Joe Biden's legislative priorities could be dead. The truth is, it won't be Mitch McConnell or Republican obstructionism that killed them. The Democrats don't even have 50 votes in their own caucus for their radical agenda. And I'm quite relieved, frankly. Meanwhile, an MSNBC contributor, who else, outrageously claims Trump is the biggest risk or threat to the country. I mean, how absurd can you get? MSNBC contributor Clint Watts just showed once again how obsessed with Donald Trump the liberal media remains when he claimed the former president is still the biggest risk to the country. Now, if he'd said that about Barack Obama, frankly, I might be willing to endorse that because I do believe Obama is almost certainly manipulating the Biden-Harris administration behind the scene. Some may recall that years ago, he was asked if he'd like to serve a third term, and he said, no, not really, but if he could just stay at home and behind the scenes manipulate what's taking place, that he'd be up for. I think he got his wish. DHS is now concerned about a new conspiracy theory, a new Trump-inspired, Trump-incited kind of rage, white rage, to use the words of General Miley yesterday, said Nicole Wallace, who's just, in my opinion, completely disgraceful of one of the lineup of propagandists who are at MSNBC. It's this. They're concerned about the Trump reinstatement conspiracy theory. The exchange came in a members-only briefing. John Cohen, DHS top counterterrorism official, gave to the House Committee on Homeland Security. What kind of a moron is this guy? Cohen told lawmakers, DHS is not aware of any specific credible threats of violence linked to the conspiracy theory about Trump being reinstated. And this, by the way, is a conspiracy theory in the weak sense of a rumor, speculation, or a guess, as opposed to a conspiracy theory in the strong sense of an empirically testable explanatory hypothesis, such as Newton's theory of gravity, Einstein's theory of relativity, or Darwin's theory of evolution, where I specialize in taking conspiracy theories from theories in the weak sense to conspiracy theories as theories in the strong sense sorting out the difference between the fabricated and the authentic evidence and bringing in experts to sort out what really happened. DHS is following discussion of the topic online among extremist communities. Extremist communities? That's probably going to include Revolution Radio as an extremist community, since we talk about these things too. Department officials are highly concerned because it fuels the false narrative that the election was rigged. Listen, the false narrative that the election was rigged. Well, when we get the results from Maricopa County, which may be released even today, you'll see massive evidence that it was rigged, just as we already have had massive evidence from Sidney Powell, from L. Lynn Wood, from Mike Lindell, that it was rigged. Frankly, if you don't know it was rigged, then you must have missed the memo. That's a narrative, he continues, that may trigger a violent response from extremists, using the word now as the Biden administration chooses to use the word to refer to any conservative voice or Trump supporter. We are extremists in their view. It's just jaw-dropping, the disgraced, twice-impeached ex-president's utterances are now a national security threat on an hourly, daily basis, he added. It is jaw-dropping because it's stupendously stupid. It's remarkable, it continues on, that there's significant online discussion about it, which means, just think, if you're a believer in this conspiracy and you've seen everything from QAnon to January 6th, the inauguration, the ballot recounts failing, and you're still pursuing this fantasy. Well, January 6th, as we reported, and as Tucker Carlson has been particularly good at exposing, appears to have been run by the FBI on behalf of Nancy Pelosi, who is Speaker of the House, controls the Capitol Police, where we know from his brother James that John Sullivan, leader of Antifa, brought 226 Antifa members dressed as Trump supporters into the Capitol. More after the break.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Just listen to this, what this MSNBC contributor Clint Watts actually says. I mean, this is going out over the national airwaves. How would it not lead to violence over time whenever each of these horizons are picked in the conspiracy space and then don't occur? And he's somehow waffling over all of these issues. We know that January 6th was staged, QAnon was involved, Nancy Pelosi wanted to disrupt the discussion of the evidence of voter fraud. Trump people had nothing to do with it. He was speaking at the Ellipse. He didn't finish speaking until 1:11. His people weren't even there. He had no motive. He had the opposite. He wasn't disrupting the count. He wanted the discussion of voter fraud to take place. Talking about the inauguration occurring, is this guy an idiot? Did he not watch that it was pre-recorded? That you could go to different channels and see different parts of what was supposed to be the broadcast of a live event? That it was actually taking place during the last 15 minutes or so of the Trump administration and therefore was not even legally valid? That it was clearly taped in several segments because at one point you have women in white and pink over here, then later over there, but they haven't moved around. That Jill's shoes went from blue to tan to blue. That there was an enormous fireworks display at the end that no one in Washington, D.C. observed. The ballot recounts, of course, are confirming the theft of the election. So this guy Cohen is completely incompetent. This John Cohen, who's the most DHS top counterterrorism official, for God's sake, totally incompetent or alternatively pure propagandist, and that's what he is. So here you have this nitwit, Clint Watts, saying, they keep coming to this over and over again, meaning all these issues. It's particularly troubling. I think one advantage we do have, and now he's boasting about censorship, is the president is not on Twitter, Facebook, and much of social media. His website was not particularly successful. It has muted his ability to really rally that base, and he's been in a limited number of public appearances. If that were to change and the conspiracy sort of pick up again, if you start to see a sort of a sizable audience gathering, that DHS assessment, namely that he's a domestic terrorist, is right on target. How absurd is this? It's actually articulating clear risk. The biggest risk to the country isn't actually from outside the country. It's not even necessarily from inside the country, but from the last person who was inside the White House. What rubbish. What unbelievable rubbish. But then that's what you get on MSNBC. It's 100% propaganda 24/7. You rarely get any truth whatsoever reported. What happened here on the 26th, therefore, must have these people quaking in their boots, because in Wilmington, Ohio, there was a huge turnout for a Trump rally. I'm looking at photographs, just an enormous number of people turning out, and I have no doubt that he's going to continue these rallies with powerful effect. Meanwhile, history made his final Arizona ballot inspections completed. So what are these yo-yos at MSNBC and the DHS going to say when all this evidence of the theft of the election emerges? The Arizona audit officially completed both a hand count and paper evaluation inspections Friday. The audit workers will now vacate Veterans Memorial Coliseum and prepare to deliver their report to the Arizona Senate. The report will be released in two phases. On Monday, we may see a preliminary detailing the accuracy of the number of certified ballots. Then we expect to see a full forensic report detailing the forensic images and ballot findings. On Monday, that's today, or soon after, we will know the true number of ballots cast in Maricopa County. If it's drastically different than the number of certified ballots, as expected, with the discrepancies found, there will be severe consequences for the election and state officials who are involved in certifying this election. The Arizona State Senate will need to consider decertifying the results if they cannot prove Biden was the winner. Attorney General Mark Brnovich will need to initiate an investigation into those involved in the scam and the cover-up. Meanwhile, Sidney Powell, Mike Lindell, appear in court over Dominion lawsuits, which appear to me to be pure public relations. This is just a stunt. Lawyers for Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, and Mike Lindell argued Thursday during a federal district court in D.C., that a defamation lawsuit filed by Elections Technology Firm Dominion Voting System should be thrown out. In other words, they're moving to dismiss. They argued Dominion acted in a government capacity during the last election, providing counties with election software. As a result, their lawyers said the firm has to prove Powell and Lindell acted with malice when they make claims against a company after the November 3rd election, citing previous court cases barring public officials from filing lawsuits against individuals who criticize them. Now, I have a certain familiarity with defamation lawsuits. I don't know why it would be necessary that Dominion should have acted in a government capacity. Obviously, Dominion is a public figure. Even if it were a limited public figure for the purpose of criticism and discussion, because they're so central to our election process. If we're dealing with an individual who's being criticized, who is a public figure or a limited public figure, then malice must be shown in order to prevail in a lawsuit for defamation against a defendant, where you have to prove, number one, that whatever was said that was purported to be defamatory was false. They won't be able to do that. Number two, that the parties involved, the defendants, knew that what they were asserting was false. And since it was true, they won't be able to prove that. But notice, even if it were false, if the parties believed it were true, they could not be guilty of defamation. And third, that the parties, nevertheless, knowing it was false, deliberately made the assertions with the intention to mislead their target audience, in this case, the general public, the American public. I don't see any possible way that this lawsuit could possibly prevail when it goes to trial. Now, whether or not they are going to prevail on their motion to dismiss is an entirely different matter. For the purpose of a motion to dismiss, the court has to take all of the allegations that are made and see if there would be a violation of the law or no violation of the law. Actually, in this case, since everything they're arguing here is correct, they cannot, in my opinion, be guilty of defamation. Perhaps, indeed, in fact, it will be dismissed. Most certainly, these are, you know, Sidney Powell is one of our nation's leading attorneys. She's going to have a wonderful attorney. If you're criticizing the government, that's not actionable, said Doug Daniels, an attorney for Mike Lindell, that the company should be classified as a government entity because they're administering the election. But Dominion's attorney, who filed these billion-dollar lawsuits against the three, disagreed. They're trying to tag us falsely with the label of a government actor. Dominion doesn't administer elections. Election officials do, using tools made by Dominion. That's a critical distinction. Powell and Dell and several top Dominion officials actually appeared in person in the federal court. Giuliani did not, but was represented by his lawyer, Joseph Sibley. Giuliani, Powell, and Lindell previously have filed motions asking the judge to toss the Dominion suits against them, which the company has opposed. We are excited to see this process move forward, told people accountable, and defend Dominion's good name. Powell's attorney, Howard Kindhauser, also asserted she is protected and didn't act with malice because she used witness affidavits submitted in court. Lawyers for Powell and Lindell, meanwhile, argued MyPillow and a fundraising website used by Powell should not be vulnerable to the lawsuit. Now, the fact that Sidney has the witness affidavits, of course, is very powerful evidence that she certainly believed what she said. And, of course, I'm adding, in addition, it was true. So I don't believe this lawsuit had any prospect of success whatsoever. Furthermore, when Powell made public statements, this is according to her attorney, she used information from experts and they weren't making allegations out of thin air, which, moreover, I'd say are going to be massively substantiated by what's going on in Arizona and in other counties. We already have outrage in New Hampshire. We got evidence of fraud in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia. This is going to be a torrent, a flood of information proof about the theft of the election. This case is part of a coordinated crusade by Dominion to silence debate regarding a matter of the utmost public concern in a democratic society, the integrity of its elections, Lindell's lawyers wrote. Plaintiffs are a private company hired by the government to perform the critical government function of helping to conduct free and fair elections. The freedom to speak openly in the public square about such subjects is a keystone foundation of freedom in our democracy, which is under assault in this lawsuit. I agree with that 100%. It's completely outrageous. What's going on here? Meanwhile, Derek Chauvin sentenced to more than 22 years in prison over George Floyd's death. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, Friday, was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison for second-degree murder months after he was convicted in the death of George Floyd, coming hours after a judge denied his request for a new trial. Now, we previously reported how he was found guilty on three different counts. Second degree murder, unintentionally killing while committing a felony. Count two, third degree murder, perpetrating an imminently dangerous act and evincing a depraved mind. Count three is second degree manslaughter. Culpable negligence creating unreasonable risk, where he was found guilty of all charges. That was back on April 20th. Meanwhile, George Floyd's brother made, to me, somewhat surprising but appropriate remarks, showing he's not just one more stooge. I just want to reiterate, not just Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. Your skin color should not define who you are. It should never be a weapon, he said later in his presentation. Well, I applaud that. I couldn't agree more. However, I believe the whole event, the whole death of George Floyd was staged. Here we got, I have images, which of course you're not going to be able to see here, but I'll tell you where you can find them, where we have George Floyd being arrested. This is a very big guy. I don't know, 6'3"? Anyway, he's got head on his hair. He has a certain shape of his face and bone structure. You can see it clearly. Now, when he's lying on the ground, he's bald, completely bald. So where does hair go? Not only that, but the facial and bone structure is different. I guarantee you, what's lying on the ground there is not George Floyd. Not George Floyd. Not only that, but it turns out what they have on the ground has his hand clearly in front of his chest when George Floyd was manacled with his hands behind his back. How is it possible with your hands manacled behind your back that you could have your right hand clearly in front of your chest? This is just absurd. We also have a video that you can find where I'm going to suggest, if you want to download it directly to your desktop, where you can see when George Floyd is lifted to be put on a stretcher, or when, shall we say, whatever is lying on the ground is lifted up to put on a stretcher, it has no legs. So what would account for the bald head, the different facial structure, the hand in front of the chest, the absence of legs? Well, it turns out they appear to have been using an African-American torso airway trainer from manufactured by Sigma 7. This is the upper torso of a Black man that was used for this purpose. I mean, I'm telling you, the whole thing was a fraud. This is a Hollywood-style production, totally fraudulent. Now, if you go to falseflagconspiracies2020.com, and that's the URL, falseflagconspiracies2020.com, all lowercase, you can get access to the archives where I've made all the presentations from my False Flag and Conspiracies conference held on the 5th and the 6th of December, available to the public for free, for free. Now, those who created the website for me plastered it with a whole lot of donation buttons. You can simply disregard those donation buttons. Just go to the top right. It'll put you in the archives. Pick the ones you want. What I'm suggesting to you, deception galore. Deception galore. While you're there, you might want to pick up others. For example, I gave my most recent presentation on what happened at Sandy Hook. You might want to pick that up. Joe Olson, by the way, the very same guy, has a presentation there about the destruction of the Twin Towers. You might want to pick that up. You can have them all for free. Download them directly to your desktop. Just go to falseflagconspiracies2020.com. Now, you'll be asked to fill out a form, but it's just to have personal information so we know who's downloaded the videos. And then it will pop up in your email just as a recognition that you downloaded those videos. But after you fill out the form, put them in your cart, go to your cart, you just press each of them in turn and they download directly to your desktop. I did it myself yesterday with several of the presentations. Those are ones I especially recommend, but there's a whole lot more there. Check it out. Meanwhile, the gun sanctuary movement has erupted, where 61% of U.S. counties are now Second Amendment sanctuaries. An analysis has revealed that more than three-fifths of all U.S. counties are so-called Second Amendment sanctuaries after a number of states this year passed legislation declaring them as such. The website Sanctuary Counties found on June 20th that there are now 1,930 counties that are protected by Second Amendment sanctuary legislation at either the state or the county level, representing 61% of all counties. It noted a number of states have passed constitutional carry laws. Specifically, 1,137 have taken it upon themselves to pass Second Amendment sanctuary legislation, and likely hundreds of cities, townships, boroughs, and so forth have done so at their level as well. This is very, very good news. A spokesman for the Sanctuary Counties movement said that a Second Amendment sanctuary refers to a state, county, city, or other municipality expressing their support for the Second Amendment and, in many cases, vowing not to enforce new or unconstitutional gun laws. I like that. Constitutional carry, by the way, refers to the ability of a state citizen to carry a weapon without a permit. In Texas, both constitutional carry and Second Amendment sanctuary bills have been passed and signed. Every sheriff in the state of Utah, moreover, signed a letter stating they would attempt to safeguard the Second Amendment. Importantly, the Second Amendment of our divinely inspired Constitution clearly states the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, signed by all 29 sheriffs. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts in April signed a proclamation designating his state as a Second Amendment. Missouri Governor Mike Parson signed a bill nullifying federal gun laws in the state. The federal government has increasingly pushed for gun control, but frankly, I think it's a lost cause. Meanwhile, the Biden ATF nominee, who appears to be a complete nut job, says law-abiding gun owners may commit violent crimes. David Chipman, let me, since we're coming to the break, let me make some points before I come back to, well, David Chipman, President Biden's nominee for director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, testified Wednesday that a law-abiding gun owner could possibly become violent, so further restrictions on all gun owners are necessary. I mean, think about this. How absurd is that? He's just saying because it's possible anyone who's been heretofore law-abiding might in the future commit a crime. Well, if someone who's heretofore been law-abiding commits a crime, let they be prosecuted for the crime. But this is called a bill of attainder. You can't hold somebody responsible for a crime they have yet to commit. There was a fascinating movie called Minority Report with Tom Cruise talking about the possibility of having a pre-crime unit that could anticipate the occurrence of crimes. But this is really ridiculous beyond belief. Here we have Senator Cronin of Texas questioning this guy. You said some of them may go on to commit crimes, but so far we're not living, I guess, in the movie, The Minority Report, where we have capability or capacity or ability to investigate pre-crimes. So what restrictions would you place on the right of a law-abiding citizen to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment? If I'm confirmed as ATF director, it's ATF's responsibility to primarily enforce the National Firearms Act, the Gun Control Act. Our priority will focus on people who break federal laws and attempt to intervene before they kill someone. That's a balance that we need to strike. But again, the Constitution is the guardrail of that activity. He was later questioned about Senator Mike Lee from Utah, remarks he's made that those who previously failed background checks, whether they should be investigated by law enforcement as potentially violent criminals. You said, while at ATF, I conducted studies involving people who failed background checks to determine how many later committed crimes with a gun. Many did. This is a perfect opportunity to arrest people before committing crimes rather than responding after the fact. I find that statement very troubling, Lee said. especially troubling for someone who's been nominated to serve as the ATF director, because even setting aside for a minute the Second Amendment, this violates our most fundamental rules of due process. I agree completely with Lee. My understanding, this guy is going nowhere. He should never have been nominated. It's just a reflection of the extreme attitudes of the Biden administration being manipulated behind the scene by Barack Obama and, of course, Israel. Meanwhile, crime is surging in 2021 in Atlanta. Homicides up 58%, shootings 40%, Portland up a staggering 533% of homicides, shootings up 126%. And that's because Portland was a relatively tranquil place before all this BLM nonsense. New York, murders 13% up, shooting 64%. LA, 22% murders, 51% shooting. Chicago, only 5% murders. That's because everyone was killing everyone else in Chicago anyway. Shootings up 18%. Philadelphia, 37%, 27%. But the Democrats don't want you to know as criminal offenses by race per capita, if you break it down to Asian, Native American, Black, and White, are overwhelmingly committed by Blacks. They overwhelmingly commit the majority of crimes in the United States, whether it's robbery or fraud or weapons or vandalism or burglary or aggravated assault. Or violent crimes, disorderly conduct, larceny, theft. I mean, they're all overwhelmingly committed by Blacks. The Democrats don't want you to know. They want you to believe that everyone is equally criminal when, in fact, overwhelmingly Blacks commit a disproportionate amount of crime in every category except those related to alcohol. For Native Americans who have a genetic disposition, intolerance to alcohol, of course, wind up being in the lead. Meanwhile, my brilliant colleague, Dr. Ewan, who maintains the Fellowship of the Mind's blog, imposed a 2016 electoral college map over a 2014 murder distribution map, which revealed that the overwhelming majority of murders are in gun-free zones created by the Democrats. Just think about it. The Democrats are creating this murder, this surge in murders. I'll be right back.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change.
that time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
As we continue today, I want to announce, callers. Mitchell will be gone during the last half hour, but we can line up callers in advance, and I can bring you in, and we can have conversation during the last half hour. The number, of course, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Now, I won't bring you in right away, but I will bring you in after the break at the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, half of adults infected in the latest COVID-19 outbreak in Israel were fully vaccinated. That's pretty damn interesting, that half of those in Israel were fully vaccinated already. Ran Balser, who leads an expert advisory panel for the Israeli government, in announcing his findings, said the country might end up implementing another lockdown after opening earlier this year. The fully vaccinated individuals were inoculated with a Pfizer commonly used in Israel. The entrance of the Delta variant, and they're playing this up, and believe me, there are going to be endless variants in the future. They're going to want to have an unending string of vaccines lined up that are going to just render the human body completely incapable of defending itself from any threat. And if Sherry Tenpenny is right, of course, most of us will be dead anyway because it's a perfectly designed killing machine in reference to the mRNA vaccines. Referring to the B1617.2 strain, look at how precise they're being. Even though, remember, the COVID-19 virus has never been isolated. So the whole idea of having a vaccine against a virus is absurd. It's not scientifically possible to design a vaccine for a virus that has never been isolated. So what they actually have is something that does something completely different. You'll pick it up here if you read between the lines. Strain of COVID-19 has now been detected in more than 70 countries where this COVID-19 is the illness caused by the novel coronavirus. New cases rose to more than 200 on Thursday from around 10 today for most of June. Then Friday, Israeli authorities told residents they must again have to wear masks indoors. The health ministry reimposed the mask mandate for all indoor settings except the home, saying it was also recommending masks be worn at large outdoor gatherings, specifically mentioning gay pride events, even gay pride events in Israel. Some 55% of Israel's 93 million population have received both doses of the Pfizer. Eligibility is now being extended to 12 to 15-year-olds. This is just terrible, by the way, vaccinating children. I mean, this is just a terrible, terrible idea. Children are virtually invulnerable anyway by any statistical measure. And, of course, if you're untreated, my opinion, if you're untreated, you have a much better survival rate than if you're treated because of all the effects. And if you start to total them up, I mean, we're talking about, you know, I think there must be maybe 15,000 deaths that are being recorded. And if, in fact, the recording system is only recording 1%, you can add two zeros. That's 1,500,000. That would, frankly, not surprise me that we could have a staggering number of deaths. And, of course, remember, we got the Deagle.com projecting that the U.S. population is going to drop from 330 million in 2020 to now 65 million in 2025. It looks as though this is through a combination of wearing masks, where even Tony the Rat did a study with colleagues and discovered most of the deaths from the Spanish flu, which took the lives of tens of millions, were not from the flu itself, but from bacterial pneumonia, which is promoted by wearing face masks. That then the second wave is from the shots, the vaccines, but since they are being resisted by quite a few in spite of all these, you know, free donuts and discounts and all this other nonsense entering into a lottery. You know, are you willing to risk your life for a donut? I mean, it's unbelievable. So they're going to resort on constraining the food supply. I believe the unseasonably hot weather and Western states is intended to destroy the food supply, that the food supply is going to shrink up. Henry Kissinger long ago said, if you want to control people, you control the food. So that the projection is that the principal mechanism of starvation to diminish the U.S. population by over 200 million will turn out to be starvation. Think about it. Starvation. I mean, I hate to be the bearer of this kind of news, but I'm doing my best to analyze exactly what's going on and what you can anticipate in the future. And that doesn't mean anyone's going to be affected. Not even my own family has been affected here. Members of my own family have gone ahead and got the vax without telling me because they thought it was the right thing to do. And they dismiss my views as, you know, a conspiracy theorist, even my own family. I mean, it's hard to believe. They don't actually look at my stuff. Everyone was good with JFK and at least halfway with 9/11. But I think Sandy Hook became the parting of the way. By the way, it should be the case. Within a couple of days, there's a decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court on my petition in relation. Meanwhile, returning to Israel, earlier this month, nearly 4,000 fully vaccinated persons in Massachusetts tested positive for the virus, which means they're calling these breakthrough infections, where they're asymptomatic, very mild, brief in duration. It may be a result of, you know, the fact that the test the CPR test is still being used, and it has like a 97% false positive rate. Breakthroughs are expected. We need to better understand who's at risk, whether people have a breakthrough, can transmit the virus. I think the problem is not the virus. The problem is the vaccines and whether those who have the vaccines can transmit the effects of the vaccines through what is known as shedding. And to the best of my knowledge, it appears that is the case, that those who are vaccinated can affect others even though they're not vaccinated and have similar effects. Now, based upon my research, it appears most of the deaths that are occurring are from blood clots. In Russia, even, they did an autopsy on a coronavirus patient, even though the World Health Organization opposed it, discovered the patient had died from blood clots and adopted an aspirin regimen and sent 14,000 patients home the same day by having them take aspirin. So you've heard the story, you know, going to take two aspirin and call me in the morning. Well, it appears it applies here. So I recommend everyone take a single aspirin every day. It's my recommendation. I'd been heretofore taking a baby aspirin every day. I'm not convinced a baby aspirin is sufficient. So I'm not a medical doctor. I'm just telling you, in my opinion, if you want to protect yourself, it looks to me as though this is one way to do it. Another is ivermectin, which appears to modify the spike protein that's creating the problems, including damage to the brain by virtue of producing prions, which those of you familiar will understand is what causes mad cow disease. Meanwhile, mask and social distancing policies need to continue indefinitely, says the World Health Organization. Mask mandates and social distancing must continue indefinitely in order to protect against new variants of COVID, said the special envoy on COVID for the World Health Organization, David Nabarro. This is just awful. Nabarro said there'd be a long list of mutations like the Indian variant. See, this is the inevitable cascade. We'll go from Delta to Lambda and then on to other Greek letters. That's inevitable. Some of the variants will be troublesome. What I'm basically saying, variants are going to keep coming. So we're going to keep the mask. We're going to keep the social distancing. We're going to keep the lockdowns. Give me a break. Meanwhile, Russia has said that the destroyer intervention in the Crimean waters was a deliberate provocation in violation of international law. And without any doubt whatsoever, that is correct. That is 100% absolutely spot on. The Kremlin voiced regret. This is the word of the Russian government news agency TASS over yesterday's incident with a British-guided missile destroyer HMS Defender targeting its missiles at Crimea while in Russian territorial waters. One might try to imagine which word or words the White House and State Department would have employed under analogous conditions of a similar event off the coast of Florida, say, in lieu of regret. A British warship, 1,700 miles from home, is one of three from NATO nations in the Black Sea currently, where the USS Laboon, that's an American ship, and the Dutch frigate, HNLMS Evertsen, the other, with a veritable armada ready to descend on the Black Sea on June 28th. Notice, that is today. For the U.S. and Ukraine-led 32-nation sea breeze exercise beginning today. Russia also regrets the upcoming naval maneuvers, saying they could give rise to the risk of unintentional incidents. A person might well wonder how unintentional they would be. Russian President Putin's spokesman Dmitry Peskov characterized yesterday's action as a deliberate provocation that violated international law. His exact words, We consider that the British destroyer has carried out a provocation. Moreover, we regret it, as this was a deliberate and prepared provocation. Having spoken those words to the Russian press corps, his duty is done, and Seabreeze comes next, with a few provocations of its own, most likely. Yet Peskov went on. He not only regrets yesterday's provocation, he's concerned about it. You don't want to contend with him or his boss when they're concerned about something. In fact, you know, they actually dropped bombs in the sea in front of the destroyer, where the British Defense Ministry denied it had happened, one of the few times in history, perhaps the only, in which a nation on the receiving end of a bombing claimed that it hadn't happened. When Turkish President Erdogan completes the Istanbul Canal connecting the Black Sea to the Sea of Marmara, the real fun will begin. As Erdogan frequently reminds the world, the new canal will not be subject to the terms and limitations of the 1936 Montreux Convention, as is the Bosphorus, and as such, the U.S. and NATO can send as many warships to the Black Sea as they choose. A person will be able to walk on them from one end of the Black Sea to the other without getting his feet wet. When that occurs, Russia will be concerned. It will express regret. Meanwhile, this is hard to believe, but British Prime Minister Boris Johnson personally ordered the warship into the Crimean waters, ignoring the warnings of his own foreign secretary. In a report released Thursday night, the outlet, that's the London Telegraph, known to be close to Prime Minister Johnson, alleged that Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab had raised concerns about the mission proposed by defense chiefs in advance. He was worried the move could hand a potential victory to Moscow. This is simply absurd that they did this. Moscow correctly observes a warship crossed into its sovereign waters, that it ordered it to turn around after being intercepted by vessels. Warning shots were fired before they left the area. London, however, refuses to recognize the Russian claims, insisting that Crimea and the surrounding sea is rightfully Ukrainian territory and that its mission was in accordance with international law. This, of course, is the kind of provocation that can lead to a world war. They have occurred over lesser intrusions than this. Meanwhile, NATO has openly identified Russia as the target of its Black Sea war games beginning today. The NATO fact sheet, a press release on the Seabreeze war games, makes it very clear. Over 32 by one count, nations will participate in the event. The nations are populated on six different continents, 5,000 troops, 32 ships, 40 aircraft, 18 special operations and diving units will be involved. The Ukrainian Navy is the co-host, only 3 months after its current and first president were openly claiming there was a danger of world war as a result of Russian military maneuvers in Russia. The NATO release contains a paragraph that could not be more transparent in disclosing the geopolitical context. Since Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea in 2014, and let me say it was not illegal, it was an international referendum recognized under international law. Crimea had been a part of Russia for 300 years. NATO has increased its presence in the Black Sea. NATO supports Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity within its internationally recognized borders, extending to its territorial waters. NATO does not and will not recognize Russia's illegal and illegitimate annexation of Crimea and denounces its temporary occupation. Listen, those are fateful words. Russia warns U.S. and U.K. not to tempt fate. Russia warned Britain and the U.S. on Friday against tempting fate by sending warships to the Black Sea and said it would defend its borders using all possible means, including military force. In a statement broadcast on state television, the Defense Ministry said it was ill-advised for British and U.S. vessels to approach the coast of Crimea, the peninsula that joined Russia in 2014. We call on the Pentagon and the British Navy, which are sending their warships into the Black Sea, not to tempt fate in vain. Let me just tell you how risky this really is. Russia has far superior military equipment. It has better anti-missile missiles. It has better anti-ship missiles. It has better anti-submarine torpedoes. And I noticed there was nothing mentioned there about the role of torpedoes here. But I'm telling you, if Russia is confronted with this military force and feels compelled to respond, all 32 of those ships will go to the bottom of the Black Sea, all 32. I'm telling you, this is no joke. This is incredibly stupid. And in my opinion, it reflects another indication of Israel's exercising control of American foreign policy. It may be that was the price Israel extracted for getting Biden and Harris into office. Meanwhile, Russia is taking other moves, sending jet fighters capable of firing the hypersonic Kinzhal missile to Syria for the first time as part of its training. For the first time, Russia has displayed two MiG-31K interceptor aircraft to Syria. The fighter is capable of carrying the much-hyped hypersonic Kinzhal air-launched ballistic missile, which has a range of around 2,000 kilometers. The Mikoyan MiG-31, first built during the Soviet Union, which disintegrated in 1991, is a supersonic aircraft currently in operation with the armed forces in Russia and Kazakhstan. The MiG-31K planes, the variant sent to Middle Eastern countries, were upgraded in 2018 to enable them to carry the state-of-the-art Kinzhal missile. The Kinzhal, which means dagger in Russian, can fly at Mach 10 speed and is said to have the ability to perform evasive maneuvers in flight. It can carry both conventional and nuclear warheads. They built a new runway. They've extended the runway in Syria. They're not going to back out of Syria. Russia is going to stand with Iran in Syria. The U.S., in the meanwhile, is pulling out of Afghanistan. Pulling out of Afghanistan was a good thing to do. I'm all for that. Meanwhile, I have a comment I want to share from a wonderful correspondent. This is fan mail for the Need to Know show. Chauvin gets 22 years for false flag. Beverly writes, I bet he won't serve one day in prison. This was a false flag op. Chauvin will be relocated to another city or country and live well, courtesy of whoever, whatever entity bankrolled this operation. Maybe he and Floyd will be neighbors. Lots of laughs. I hope Mona Alexis Presley, my dear colleague, who's done spectacular work, can do some super sleuthing to find out if Chauvin is actually housed in any prison. Also, didn't you have a guest on who has retired from law enforcement? Also, there's the police officer who told you about widespread pedo among politicians. Ask them to use their sources to find out if Chauvin is truly in a prison. I like that. Meanwhile, I'm doing a two-part exposing the real story behind 9/11 with Scott Bennett, who has a program on America Media Periscope, 9 p.m. on Friday and Wednesday. We did our first hour mostly about the faking of the crash sites at Shanksville and the Pentagon and the North Tower. But I'm going to go into much greater detail about the South Tower on Wednesday and how the World Trade Center, particularly the Twin Towers, were destroyed using a different technique that was employed on Building 7. So you might want to check that out, the real story. His show is called Great Awakenings on America Media Periscope, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesday, Part 2. Meanwhile, a colleague who's joined with me in an amicus curiae brief, now submitted to the U.S. Supreme Court in relation to the trial of Zokhar Sarinov, where the images of the individuals, the Sarinov brothers, were photoshopped into the marathon footage, but they made a mistake because the backpacks the brothers are wearing don't match the backpacks that exploded. Neither of them is a black nylon backpack with a white square sewn on it. Tamerlan's large baggy backpack, much bigger than the ones that exploded. Tamerlan's isn't even the same color, gray or silver. So this whole thing was absurd. In any case, my colleague, where the brief has been submitted on behalf of three American citizens, the second of whom, Mary Maxwell, has informed me about Dunn Blaine, and where I'm fairly astonished to discover that Dunn Blaine was used as a template or inspiration for Sandy Hook. The Dunn Blaine massacre took place at Dunn Blaine Primary School near Stirling, Scotland, in 13 March 1996, when one Thomas Hamilton actually shot and killed 16 pupils and one teacher and injured 15 others before killing himself. It remains the deadliest mass shooting in British history. Public debate about the killing centered on gun control laws, including public petitions for a ban on private ownership of handguns and an official inquiry, which produced a 1996 Cullen report. In response to this debate, two new firearms acts were passed which outlawed the private ownership of most handguns within the UK. Now, a very astute student of Dunn Blaine has given an interview comparing Dunn Blaine with Sandy Hook. And you can find that also on my channel at BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, from Dunn Blaine to Sandy Hook. And when we return, I have callers on the line. I'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia. at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We have Bruce from Texas on the line. Bruce, please join the conversation.
Hey, Jim. Hey, before I get into the main subject, I just found it strange, don't you, that they have no video. They haven't even been asked about video about McAfee's death there in the Spanish prison.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, I believe he was suicided. I don't think this guy was remotely suicidal. He has family members or others making that point as well. But I also think it's absurd to suggest that he would have identified the location where all this, you know, incredibly serious documentary tribe, these hard drives were located. I mean, the idea of telling people where it is just ridiculous on its face. So I discount that aspect of the story, but whether or not, you know, this structure, which according to Joe Olson had a 40-year lifespan, you know, could have been given a little assist in coming down, that's a whole nother matter. The question becoming what would be the motive, however, if it were not the case that those hard drives were located there. I have also been told that his son resided there, but I don't have confirmation. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know. His son was residing there. And what do you think about General Milley there in Congress? I've read Mao Zedong, I've read Karl Marx, I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist. I'm sure the people you're speaking to really love that one. He comes across, not one of his decorations is for valor, though. And for someone who's been that long, I know you're, he's a book
kisser. A friend of mine, Joe D'Angelo, has just sent an email from McAfee, who had previously tweeted, "If I suicide myself, I didn't, I was whacked," which is further confirmation for the point you were raising initially. And, you know, the absence of any footage, yes, I think that's significant. Keep going, Bruce. Keep on it.
Yeah, it's amazing that all these, you know, he must have been the highest profile prisoner in Spain. And, you know, someone, you know, trying to retort to me there on the chance that, well, what's a Spanish prison? You know, what do you expect? Like, well, like he was kept in a spaghetti Western style prison. Come on. You know, obviously they do this just like with Epstein, just like with that attorney there and who was held in a supermax where he was accused of trying to assassinate his wife, Edgar Steele, I think his name was.
And, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just terrible what happens. But this just broke or just came out on The Guardian. Top U.S. general, General Milley, got to a shouting match with Trump over race protest. The shouting match in the White House Situation Room was reported on Monday by Axios. And Donald Trump and him yelled at, he said, you can't, Trump told him that you can't effing talk to me like that. When Milley said that he would not be in charge of any federal response to the Black Lives Matter protest.
What was the date on that? Milley seems to me to be a dim bulb. The guy just doesn't seem to me to be very smart. There is, of course, an ambiguity in talking about studying critical race theory, just as he said he studied Mao, you know, read the Communist Manifesto. I mean, to understand these movements, you need to study them. So if he meant we were going to study critical race theory as opposed to indoctrinate or teach it, meaning as though it were true, is a whole nother, these are two different kettles of fish. And I thought Milley was not very astute in explaining what he meant. If he actually meant merely, you know, studying them like we study other theories, which in some of his sentences he seemed to imply that's what he meant, he ought to have been more explicit. You're telling me way back when, during the Trump administration, Milley was resisting taking any action against BLM activists who were looting and rioting? That's what you're telling me, Bruce, right?
Right. This is in The Guardian. You can find it. I'll read the first paragraph. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, reportedly yelled at Donald Trump that he was not and would not be in charge of the federal response to protests for racial justice, prompting the then president to yell back, "You can't effing talk to me like that." So that tells you, I mean, and they're pushing through now that Trump's gone. He's not combating CRT and the military and all this woke stuff, and they're bringing in trannies and all this. And, they're Bolshevikizing the military, and if he was studying it to oppose it, he wouldn't be sitting back while it happens in his own organization, you know. if he's going to fight back against white supremacism, I mean, I'm sure he hasn't read My Awakening by David Duke or any of your works, you know, or anybody on the right. So that tells me that he's a communist. He's a commie. He's a dim bulb, too, you know, and it's disgraceful that a guy like this is at the highest level of the U.S. military. But, you know, after the Obama purges, and I'm sure the DIA and other intel organizations, they tap the phones, they follow the emails and the chats of the highest officers in the U.S. military to determine who's going to be loyal to their agenda and who's not, because you got a lot of good generals and stuff, and especially colonels. I'm sure you're aware that, you know, if you're a real good soldier, real good officer that is patriotic and all this, you might get stuck at colonel because they don't want you to go up. You have to be nominated by the president and approved by the Congress. So it's a charade, and I'm disgusted. And that's what I wanted to get off my chest.
Yeah, Bruce, no, I couldn't agree more with you. Now tell me, what was the date of that exchange between Trump and the general in the Situation Room?
They're not given a date. It had to be last summer or last spring.
Yeah, well, there should be a date on the report somewhere at the top.
Well, the report is Monday, 28th June, today. The report
Okay, so they're just giving a look back to say that Milley has been a problem in the past here, it would appear. Okay, good. Thanks for that, Bruce. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, sir. Thank you. I'll let the next caller come on. Thanks for taking the call.
Okay, I'm pleased you called in, Bruce. Thanks very much. Scaredy Cat, glad to have you here, Scaredy. Join the conversation.
Hi, Jim. So, speaking about, quote, white lives matter didn't burn and loot 300 or 400 cities across America last summer, right? It was Black Lives Matter. And so I'm wanting to tell you that two countries Hungary and Croatia are not bowing down to Black Lives Matter. And you see, they have got us coming and going because, of course, every human being thinks that life is important. And, of course, nobody wants to put down Black Lives Matter, just the English phrase. Black lives do matter, of course, right? Everybody knows that. And anything bad happened to a person, we want to defend them against injustice. And so my point of view is I came up with, let's see, BLM, APM, all particles matter in the universe. Because of course, I'm now saying that we should think about everything, all the pollution that the filthy rich are causing our universe, you know? So every stone is important also, not to be included in all living things. But that's just my side comment. So going back to Hungary and Croatia, I found out about that. I think in the European football championships, which might be going on now or maybe just recently ended, they were the only two countries which didn't bow down to the corporation called Black Lives Matter. And so I think what we have to do, and that's, it would be called soccer here in the United States of America. So the European football championships, Hungary and Croatia stood up with a straight spine. And I think, so now we have to keep an eye on those countries and at least morally help their presidents and support them from any harm that might be whipped up against them from the Jew media, especially vis-a-vis the other president, Tanzania's president in Africa. I think he died suspiciously and suddenly after he showed the PCR test, right, to be a fraud. Not a fraud in the lab, but fraud when used to decide a diagnosis on if a person is ill or not. And it was the inventor, Nobel Prize winning chemist, said, we're only doing this test. He got a Nobel Prize for discovering it, polymerase chain reaction. And he did it as a tool in the labs, where if you think you have something there and there's a very tiny amount, you just magnify 30, 40, 50, 60 times so you can have more of the substance you can play around with rather than just one speck or one molecule. And so therefore, it doesn't prove anything because all of us have every item in the universe in us, a speck of it, right, that ever lived practically, a speck of dust of this and that from the negative infinity beginning of time. We have that. So and then the poor old Tanzania's president, he himself an educated chemist. He knew it was nonsense, so he proved it to the whole world, and suddenly he died. And so we have to protect Croatia and Hungary now because they're standing up against this monster, huge, monster meaning huge, powerful BLM corporate machine. So I just wanted to say that to you.
I think you're right about all that. And it's interesting that some of these Eastern European nations are showing a greater degree of intelligence and integrity in dealing with these issues than Western nations, than the United States in particular. I mean, it's, to me, in many ways, it's embarrassing. But then again, you know, it's all a deliberate part. It's because other governments are complicit in these frauds, and those Eastern European countries, those nations are not. I mean, it's refreshing, you know, scaredy. So I agree completely that it's impressive to see them resisting the absurdities to which Western nations are succumbing.
Yeah, I do want to sympathize with the Western nations, though, because, sorry, Jim, I have a blunt tongue, and I can't twist myself and use euphemism. So I'm just going to say the West has been Jew-occupied. And the reason is it's not going against a people. It's just that that culture, the Jew culture, allows usury. And it's not, I think it won't be useful to say that I'm saying that underline as a Muslim. All cultures have realized over time, including the Christian culture, including Hindu culture, including ancient culture of China, all societies realized at some point that interest, lending at interest, is the most harmful thing to society. And it can be seen, oh, it's just a little bit of interest. But the problem is it accumulates so that people who are gaining that free money didn't have to work for it. And it's an escalating, exponential benefit that eventually strangles each society that allows that to grow. And in fact, I think in Christian countries, including America, even up until maybe up until 50 years ago, it was not allowed in certain states in America, even like Texas, I think might be one of them especially. And even I remember myself personally in my own lifetime, there was a disaster that happened to a family, and we were wanting to rescue him from life and death, and so we took on a lot of credit card debt instead of but that was decade and a half ago, and I remember at the time, because I kept having to take on debt, my credit card rating became bad to the point that I was getting credit card offers of like 35% interest. And I remember hearing it on the news that, America, being a Christian country, had capped the interest at, I think, like 30%. There was some limit, and I remember it being discussed in the radio that it might have been 10, 15 years ago, maybe 20, that the Congress had actually, written a new law or removed the old law, capping the high interest, and now suddenly there were credit card offers of 30%, more than 30%, like 36%, 40%, which is killing people. They will take it in an emergency just to survive that day and then that month, but then never, and then the year goes by, years go by, decades go by. They cannot keep all their money is going to the bank then, and that's how really like a disease, like real illness, meaning people become so weak through having to just earn money, and not being able to do something good with the money. It's always just going off to a filthy rich banker. And that, and I think that the thing that distinguishes Jew culture from all other human cultures over time is that they are the unique culture which allows it. And every other culture, at least at some point in history, had fought against it and lived for centuries banning it. But then slowly, because of the weakness or the, I'm a little bit greedy too, like the greed of the rulers who wanted a little bit free money, they succumbed to the Jews offering this money at interest. And slowly, those nations, even though morally and philosophically and religiously they were against interest, money being used to give somebody interest, that is, interest, no work, earning money on money, slowly, the Jew culture got a hold and of civilizations, and everybody fights it, but the poor Western civilization, they succumbed first, the English. And that is the reason for the success of the British Empire. They succumbed totally, became Jew-occupied, the English kings and queens. And that gathering of a huge mountain of money then enabled the British queens and kings to occupy the world. And
scary.
That didn't happen so much to the East. Go ahead.
That's all fascinating stuff, and I think you've got it spot on. I want to add a few additional reports of stories coming in as we speak. Here's one of my colleagues caught a few minutes of the mainstream reporting about the condo collapse, where MSNBC is reporting an Israeli search and rescue team is there doing the rescues and going through the wreckage. Now, I find that pretty disturbing. We had that in Buenos Aires in, 1992 and 94, as I recall, when there was an explosion that blew up the Israeli embassy, and then it didn't cause enough to do, so they blew up the Jewish embassy. It was the Israelis doing it themselves to punish Argentina for cooperating with Iran in the peaceful development of nuclear energy. And they brought in an Israeli search team when they couldn't find the car bomb outside of the Jewish community center. They said the explosive had been so powerful it blew the car bomb into the ground. I mean, this is absurd on its face. And they dug in the ground, and guess what? They came up with just one part of the car, the VIN number. I mean, give me a break. This is absurd beyond belief. I would say this suggests, this gives credence to the McAfee, hard drive actually having been stored there, though I think it's preposterous that he would announce it. Really, absolutely announce it. Meanwhile, we have other reports coming that the Biden administration has mandated critical race theory being taught at every level of the federal government. There's a question here whether McAfee's dead man switch may have been flipped. A legal scholar has observed that the Department of Justice lawsuit over the Georgia election bill, I'll be reporting on this in other shows, it could backfire against Biden, where they're trying to interfere with a state's right to determine how the state conducts their electoral vote contest, which is clearly spelled out by the Constitution. I mean, that I think he's right, and that's Jonathan Turley. Biden slips, Trump stays strong in polling. Chicago crime data, Box Lightfoot, meaning, of course, that this Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, who seems to me like totally intellectually compromised. She comes across to me like a mental midget. Let me report a bit here. Crime data compiled by the Chicago Tribune shows that more people have been shot this year in the Windy City so far than at the same point in 2020. This appears to contradict Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot's contention at a press conference Friday that crime is on the decline. All our major indices show a decline in our crime and our homicides and our shootings year over year are down. There have been 1,587 persons shot in Chicago in 2021 so far, almost 200 more than at the same point last year, according to data updated through June. And you'll, of course, recall I was pointing out how shootings are up in all of these major cities that are controlled by the Democrats. And the idea for Lori Lightfoot to insist that shootings are down when the evidence is so overwhelming and available is simply ridiculous. Scaredy, I'm so glad you called in. Would you like to add a final thought here before we must part for today?
Yes, Jim. Have a happy day. And just, there is a White Lives Matter Day coming up August the 6th worldwide. And Mark Collette, who is an English, the famous English nationalist, he's spearheading this. And so do something personally, individually, anywhere, you know, take a picture and publicize it and grow it every year. And I'm glad that this year they choose August the 6th, which is Hiroshima Day. And because in my opinion, we have to have solidarity. That was, in my mind, if we think about it, the real Holocaust. People burned to a crisp in a nuclear incineration, because after all, Holocaust means burning, burning sacrifice. And there are these shadow people in Hiroshima. When the bomb came, the body was just vaporized, and the ashes are now living in buildings like a little girl skipping rope. She's just there, but she has vanished into those ashes traced on the side of the building. So if we, all of humanity, if we think about it, and we have to think of all these different atrocities and murders of people throughout time, I think we could agree, if we think seriously, that the Hiroshima, Nagasaki nuclear murder of people can be labeled as the true Holocaust. So I'm glad Mark Collette picked August 6th and to be in solidarity with, you know, suffering. And English and Europe and her descendants are definitely being targeted for genocide. So therefore, all of humanity, let's get together and do White Lives Matter. We also think Black Lives Matter, but just let's do it on August 6th publicly.
Absolutely, absolutely. As George Floyd's brother observed, all lives matter. Scaredy, thank you for calling in. Bruce, too, thank you for calling in, and all of you. I hope we have a great week. More to report as matters develop.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was...